Paul Theroux will be in next week.
He, oh, really?
Very interesting book.
The Kingdom by the Sea.
Yes, where he straddled the coast.
That's right. I read an extract from that in one of the English Sunday papers whilst I was out in Los Angeles. And I must say, a profoundly depressing description of England.
It was a little depressing, but I don't think he set out to glorify it.
No.
What is it real? Is it true?
Yes. I mean, it's certainly what you would think of English seaside towns, seeing them in a certain mood.
Yeah.
It's certainly consistent with the truth, if not absolutely the whole truth.
Are these skinheads a real presence in England?
Oh, yeah.
What's the other group called? Their competitors? I think they meet for clashes in
Brighton. Well, it used to be the Mods and the Rockers. Now it's the skinheads and the, probably in the suede heads.
I don't remember. He describes it in the book, but skinheads stuck out. I think we have an equivalent in the United States called the Hell's Angels.
People. Oh, yes, we have Hell's Angels.
You have those two?
Oh, yes. There was a big... there was a big thing in England about 3 weeks ago, because in some little village somewhere there'd been a major Hell's Angels party where two gangs who had been rivals for many years decided to get together and have a party and bury the hatchet, so to speak. And unfortunately, two of the Hell's Angels ended up having hatchets buried in their heads, so it didn't work out.
I have acquired over the years the books, so I don't have the paperback edition here, Carol, because I gave that away to somebody. But I have the whole trilogy here, and I want to ask you a few things about yourself. Obviously, there's a tremendous momentum going with this trilogy, and your publisher wants to sustain it. This is evidenced by the quality of the press kit.
Right.
Because sometimes I do a daily a book, it's a report on books, it's a news report on books, it's not a talk show, as you will probably find yourself on here in New York, but that's why we can talk casually with coffee, because I extract it and I write a lot of it.
Right.
So that's why we don't have to be as formal as you might be if you were to do a live broadcast.
That's a major piece of junk mail, isn't it?
Well, I found it extremely helpful because it gave me an awful lot of background about yourself. What has the writing of this trilogy done for you?
What has it done for me? I suppose it's got me a large audience and paid off my bank overdraft, and means I've travelled a lot. But one thing it hasn't actually done is actually made writing any easier. I keep on thinking, now I've had some successes, that next time I sit down to write something, I know where I am now and I can do it. And actually it gets more and more difficult each time, which is a disappointment.
Why does it get more difficult? Many writers tell me that as they become more adept at their craft, they find that it becomes easier. It's harder in some respects in trying to find new things to write about.
Well, that's interesting. I've never actually heard anybody say that. Certainly it's been my experience, and that I think of most of the people I've ever spoken to, that everybody thinks it's going to get easier, and it doesn't. So I'm surprised and envious to hear that for some people it does, because for me it certainly doesn't.
Morris West, for example, he says his difficulty is in coming up with new themes, but the craft of writing, the actual setting down before a typewriter and turning out words, describing scenes, is easier for him as the years go on.
No, I don't find that, because I think one of the things is that because I write in order continually to surprise the audience, and if it's going to surprise them, it's got to surprise me as well. So I actually sit down in front of the typewriter, particularly sort of 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, and think, go on, surprise yourself. It's pretty tough order.
What are you working on now? Are you
I'm still working on completing a screenplay for a film of Hitchhiker, and I'm about to set to work on the fourth book on the trilogy of the trilogy.
No.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Yes. I had my arm twisted very, very slightly, and so I thought I would do it. In fact, it's partly caused by the fact there was one idea I set up at the end of the third book, and which I didn't complete, and it suddenly sort of seemed to me as if it could be something which could form the basis of the structure of a whole other book. So I've decided I better sit down and write it.
Excuse me, we're taping here.
Oh, you are, sorry. Mr. Fine told me. No, don't say
any
of that again. This is great,
Jess. Who was that, anyway? Who was that masked man?
Do you want me to say any of that again?
No, that's all right. Let's go back a little bit, Douglas. Just to give me a little background. Much of this material, of course, is well known, and it's certainly contained in the press kit. But just give me a little background, because I see that the idea came to you while you were asleep, I guess, on a slope.
Asleep on a slope? Well, it was more than asleep on a slope. It was actually lying drunk in a field in Innsbruck. It had been something of an odd day. I was hitchhiking through Europe, and I had a copy of the book called The Hitchhiker's Guide to Europe, which is where, as you'll guess, the idea of the title came from. I didn't have Europe on, as it was then, $5 a day, because I couldn't afford the book, and I really didn't have $5 a day. So I was getting by on sort of half a dollar a day kind of thing, and wandering around, going to youth hostels and asking for half a meal, because it was what I could afford. So on one occasion, I really hadn't eaten for about 2 days, and I'd had this very, very strange day in Innsbruck, because I'd been trying to find my way to a particular address. And I'd stopped somebody in the street, and to ask them the way. And I knew there was going to be some difficulty in this conversation simply because I didn't speak German. On the other hand, we seemed to be having more difficulty than I actually thought I was due. And I eventually worked out the guy I was talking to was deaf and dumb. So I sort of hurriedly sort of extracted myself from the conversation as politely as I could and walked down the road and asked somebody else. But they, unfortunately, also were deaf and dumb. So at this point, I think I went and had a stiff drink somewhere. And wandered out of the bar and asked somebody else, and they also were deaf and dumb. And when the fourth person was deaf and dumb, I just tried to get out of town as fast as I could, and on the way past a hotel where, of course, they're having a convention for the deaf and dumb. Though who was speaking at it, I don't know. So it was after that that I went and lay in this field. And as the stars came out that night, it suddenly occurred to me that somebody ought to write A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And I forgot about it and fell asleep and didn't actually remember that title again for about 6 years. So it was a strange day.
I understand that on the college campuses you're quite a cult figure. Do you do a lot of speaking on the campuses?
A bit, yes. I've done a few. I've got a lecture tour agency here in New York who keep on setting up tours for me to do. But I've never sort of done it in any concentration, simply because each time I say to them, okay, here's 2 weeks in the middle of such and such a month, I can do it. And they start fixing up dates, and I phone them back in a week's time and say, sorry, I can't do it then. So I've then got, you know, two dates fixed up at one particular time and two dates at another. But I've done a few, yes.
What are some of the questions the students ask you?
I suppose the most common one is there any significance to the number 42? which I can reveal exclusively to WCBS Radio, there is not. It is merely a joke.
With some of us, it's a waistline.
Oh, dear. Yes. And otherwise, they ask me about, you know, if any of the characters are based on real people. And about what's going on currently, you know, the film.
Do they really trail around after you on the campus?
Well, I must say, they certainly turn out in pretty good numbers. I did one at Boston last week where I think there were 11 or 1,200 people came. And one of the strangest things is people will come with towels around their necks, you know, and then I have to sign towels for them because there is this... It only features very, very briefly in one of the books, the idea that if you're going to hitchhike around the galaxy, you need to have your towel with you. And somebody who's an organized, together person would be somebody who really knows where their towel is. And this came from... a few years ago when I was with some friends staying in Greece, and every morning we would set off to the beach or wherever, and there would be a sudden hiatus for about half an hour whilst I would try and find either the book I was reading or my towel or sunglasses or swimming trunks or whatever it was. And it was usually my towel I couldn't find. I'm still like this. And out of this just evolved the phrase that anybody who would actually be at all organized or together with somebody who really know where the towel was.
Well, you're certainly not crying into your towel. Do you find any difference in the audience that you have in the United States as compared to that in Britain?
No. No, really not. It's funny because everyone always tries to tell you that there's a great difference between the English and the American audience. I don't think there is. I think there's a great deal of difference in the way that the audiences get treated. I mean, whenever I sit down and watch an evening of American TV, then I really find it pretty depressing. So I think there's a great deal of difference in the way the audiences get treated. But no, I don't think there's any real difference.
You don't like Dallas and all these high-grade...
Actually, Dallas, I have to say, at one stage about 3 years ago, it was very, very big in England for a while. I don't know if it still is. But all around the time of JR getting shot, and it was completely compulsive at that point, and I did watch that.
I've heard so much about Dallas, and I'm going to sit down and watch it one of these nights.
Well, I did actually see an episode just the other day, which was... they didn't actually seem to have moved anywhere forward in 2 or 3 years. It seemed to be going over and over and over the same stuff. And I thought
they don't. I grew up, in fact, in the era of the radio soap operas, and they moved very slowly across the week. You could pick it up 2 years later, and it's still the same half hour.
Right. Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. You have been equated a number of times with Kurt Vonnegut, who is a very fine satirist and writer. Do you find that to be...
Well, no, not really. I mean, yes, there is a slight influence there, but actually there are much stronger influences which people don't spot because the subject matter isn't similar. I mean, the fact that I write comedy and it's to do with robots and spaceships, and Kurt Vonnegut writes a kind of comedy and also sometimes deals with robots and spaceships, makes people think, well, therefore they must be writing the same kind of thing. Whereas I think Vonnegut, certainly when he was writing his best stuff, was actually a much more serious writer in a way. I mean, I think a much stronger influence actually on my writing would be something like P.G. Woodhouse. People don't spot that because P.G. Woodhouse didn't write about robots and spaceships. So I think the Vonnegut comparison, whilst being very flattering to myself, is probably more a label than anything more more significant.
He too is considered a cult figure on the American
Yes, side. I guess so.
Have you met him?
No, time? I never have. I mean, I was a great admirer of his early books. I think his most recent books. I kind of felt that he was doing it because writing books is what he does rather than for any more great drive than that.
You mentioned Woodhouse. What other influences in terms of writing?
Well, I mean, I suppose obviously Python is an influence. I mean, I grew up. I should make the point because people often think that I'm connected with the Pythons in some way or other, which I'm not. Though most of them are friends of mine. But they're actually all 10 years older than me. And so that was certainly an influence there. And otherwise, I mean, I always particularly admire comedy writers because I know how difficult it is. So I suppose one would count, therefore, as influences, though remote ones, Dickens and Austen and, you know, all the other great practitioners of comedy in English, even more. But I don't know, it's a rather grand claim to claim that these are influences, but obviously they are. You know,
well, they
the
had
writers
to,
I grew up with.
Well, the Python influence had to be there. The Hitchhiker series was indeed an offshoot from the radio broadcast that you
That's
wrote,
right,
right?
Yeah.
Were there some origins of the Hitchhiker and the... Did you write for the Pythons at all?
No, I worked with Graham Chapman of Python for about 18 months, largely on projects which didn't see the light of day. Graham is not the least weird person in the world, and at the time I was working with him, he was probably going through his not least weird period, and a lot of stuff actually didn't get achieved. But no, I never actually worked directly with him. I mean, one of my best friends is Terry Jones, who again is one of the Pythons, and he's also the one who directs the films. And he and I constantly talk about whether we're actually going to work on something together. But I get a little bit nervous about that because he's such a great personal friend that I wouldn't like to take the risk of then working with somebody and maybe it doesn't work out too well, and you know, you can end up actually damaging friendships somehow.
Did you find any difficulties in transferring the themes and, well, actual writing, I guess, from a radio script to an actual literary presentation?
I mean, the word difficulties, but I mean never appalling ones. I mean, it was there were interesting problems, put it that way. Certainly, it's the easy way into a book, already to have your material prepared in another medium. On the other hand, there are things which do present difficulties simply because each medium you write in, to a certain extent, places its own demands on the material and also shapes the material. And there are things that, had I been writing directly for book, would never ever have surfaced. I mean, similarly, when we transferred it to TV, we had problems because it being a radio show, it had a narrator, and the narrator had come to be an absolutely centrally important part of the radio show. But if you were sitting down to do a science fiction comedy on TV, it would never have occurred to you in a million years to saddle yourself with a narrator. Why would you need one? On the other hand, it had become such a central part of the radio show that we had to do that on TV. So that on the one hand presented a problem, but then solving that problem turned out to be the best part of the TV show. So, there are problems tend to bring, problems which bring solutions often bring about your best material.
Going back just a moment, you mentioned many of the writers who had influenced you, named Dickens and others. But you, and we talked about Vonnegut, but you have not named any science fiction writers at all.
No, well, I'm not really a great science fiction fan, actually. I now have at home shelf loads of science fiction books, all of which have been given to me by people saying, oh, well, if you're into science fiction, you should read this and you should read that. And they're all sort of bent back to about page 20, which is as far as I've got. I mean, I think one of my problems I have with reading science fiction, though occasionally one comes across a good one and it's wonderful and I love it, but what I can't bear is that so much is actually badly written. I mean, this sounds a sort of slightly sort of snotty thing to say, but I mean, for instance, Isaac Asimov, who clearly has wonderful ideas and has an extraordinary brain and so on, but his writing style, I wouldn't ask him to write a piece of American Express junk mail. Just in terms of the writing style of how words follow each other in the sentence and how sentences follow each other in a paragraph.
You dare say that about a man who writes three books a year?
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I have a lot of respect for what he does well, but what he does badly, I think he does very badly.
Well, it's very clear that the Hitchhiker books cut through the science fiction genre and reach a vaster audience. Mm. Were you surprised that the books have made the bestseller list?
That's always a very difficult question to answer, simply because obviously whenever you sit down to write anything, you're going to fantasize a little bit about, this is going to be the greatest thing ever since the last thing that was the greatest thing ever. Which is not the same thing as seriously thinking, anything like that's going to happen. On the other hand, because there's a little bit of preparation in your mind, from the fantasy level, for you know, things suddenly taking off. You're never caught entirely by surprise. So it's a very difficult question to answer. If you were asking, well, I pleased, I would say yes. Actually, I'll tell you something that I've particularly enjoyed about the success in America is that it's been more gradual than in England, because in England it was very, very sudden when it happened. I mean, I've been writing the radio series for a while, and then I wrote the book, and the book came out and stunned everybody, myself obviously included, by going into the bestseller list at number one and just sitting there. Because nobody realised that people actually listened to, you know, to BBC Radio 4 very much. And if one was to believe the BBC's audience research figures, you'd have to believe that everybody who'd heard the show had gone out and bought two copies of the book that week. So that was very, very sudden, that success. And thereafter, doing the second book and the third book, it wasn't so much the excitement of how well the book might possibly do, but it's the worry that it mightn't do as well as the previous one, or it mightn't get to number one or whatever. Now, and that sort of spoils the sort of thrill of the chase in a kind of way. And it sounds an ungrateful thing to say, but it is true. Whereas in America, you know, it's been a much, much more gradual establishment. And so each book has done successfully better than the previous one. And I'm sort of sitting and the sort of bestseller list comes out every week. And I'm going, hey, get up there. And so I actually sort of enjoy that much more in a strange kind of way. It's like sort of rooting for your horse, you know.
Has your success changed your lifestyle at all?
Did
you move out of a studio apartment and into a one bedroom or something like that?
Well, I've lived in some places that I wouldn't want my best friend to live in or worst enemy to live in.
I'm living there now.
Well, there was I think the place I was living in, two homes ago, would have been. I mean, the best thing one can say about it is there weren't any rats, because all the rats had moved out because they really couldn't bear it anymore. It's changed my lifestyle from that point of view, and there's a bit of spare cash around.
How do you like visiting the United States?
Oh, very much. I would put one constraint on that, which is that I've been coming to the States very regularly for about 3 years, prior to which I hadn't been here at all, and adore most of it. As far as I'm concerned, actually, most of it is New York, which is where I spend most of my time. And I adore New York. On the other hand, I just went and spent 7 months in Los Angeles, and I adored that somewhat less, actually quite a lot less. I was very, very glad to get out. I found that, sadly, everything that everybody ever says in criticism of Los Angeles was simply true. One always hopes that the truth is going to be sort of more complex and interesting than the ordinary things that everybody ever says about it. But it was absolutely true, and I really found I didn't like it.
Well, Douglas Adams, I thank you very much for coming in, and certainly an engaging young man, and it was quite interesting talking to you. I hope you enjoy your tour and you're not completely worn out by the time it's over.
Thank you very much.
Pocketbook says a lot of things ahead of you.
Right.
Before you leave, how long will you be here?
I've only got a week more to do this tour, ending up in Los Angeles and then flying back home to do some work.
Back to work.
Right.
After all this entertainment. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it.